I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Nick Parks. Nick is the MicroFame media evangelist. He's a writer and content marketer. Nick was the co-founder of Launching Creative. His writing has appeared in Forbes, The Muse, and Chelsea Crossed. Nick has made an appearance on the Ask Gary Vee show. Nick, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, David. I've really been looking forward to it.
Yep, I know we've talked about this for a long time, so I'm glad that we're finally making it happen.
Absolutely.
So I wonder if we could start off by actually talking about your title, which is Media Evangelist. What is that? What does it mean?
Yeah. You know, Guy Kawasaki is the one who kind of pioneered that term. And he's someone who I really admire as an entrepreneur and an investor. And kind of his story, he was the evangelist for Apple back in the 80s. And, you know, it's very similar to just how in a religious setting, people will become an evangelist and they try to convert people and you know, win people to their team. The business world has kind of taken that term, which is, I think, pretty interesting. And that's what Guy did. And he basically built a following around Apple. And even to this day, you have very, very loyal Apple fans and Apple followers. And, you know, Apple's just very different than, say, Microsoft, because when you have someone who loves their iPhone or, you know, their iPad or anything like that, they're very passionate about it. And it's pretty fascinating when you are able to get people who are not necessarily working for your team, they're customers, but they're very passionate followers, and they will tell other people about your product or your service, and they'll even defend your brand when there's criticism around it.
So, Nick, what is it about being an evangelist that excites you? Why are you interested in this particular role?
You know, I think it's just, it's fun to basically have a message, some kind of positive message in a business setting, and you're telling people about this idea, I guess, because I'm very much a creative thinker. So kind of this idea of having an idea or a concept and sharing it with people and having people who are very open and receptive to it, and they kind of adopt it and they start telling people about it. I don't know, it's just kind of this explosion effect. And I think it's something that's very interesting, and it's still relatively new. I think it's a very different way of doing business than how business was conducted in the 20th century, where you just kind of had a mass message that was blasted on radio or television saying, buy our product. Now it's kind of like building a tribe or a club where people feel like they belong and they're kind of connecting. And, you know, there might be an underlying reason why they connect with each other. You know, they might not love Apple products just because they love computers. They might love Apple products because they consider themselves to be creative people. And Apple is a company that creates a product for creative professionals.
Interesting. Do you think that Apple speaks to people who are not creative too?
Yeah, I think they do. I don't think it's exclusive in that way. I mean, there are people who aren't necessarily creative, quote unquote, and they still use, you know, an Apple computer or something like that. But you know, it's definitely just kind of the default machine for someone who's a graphic designer or a videographer or anything like that. I mean, even writers will use it, but you don't necessarily need an Apple computer over, you know, something running Windows to write. So it's just, yeah, I feel like it's a club that, even though people really connect with it, it's not too exclusive. I don't think people feel alienated by it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Going back to the term creative thinker, what does that mean to you?
To me, I think it's basically just doing something beyond a task, you know, and doing something that really involves the right brain. And I think we're seeing that a lot in business, especially just in the 21st century, that you need to use both hemispheres of your brain, I mean, Daniel Pink has a really great book. I'm a big fan. It's called A Whole New Mind. And he talks about that, how in the 20th century was when our economy really evolved into an industrial economy. It was an industrial society, and we really needed left brain thinkers who put systems and processes into place and really obsessed over efficiency, because efficiency was very, very important. And he's saying that's still true, but now in the 21st century, we're also seeing an evolution again where we need abstract thinkers, we need idea creators, because if we're focusing on the process exclusively, these jobs can be, ultimately they can be automated, or they can be outsourced, or it can just go to someone who can do it for a cheaper price. But when you're creating something, that's very unique. And an example I think of is like Pixar. Pixar, they create movies, but there's something about Pixar that's very, very different than any other movie company out there. And it's just not being replaced. It's not really being replicated. And I think it's because even though they have these processes and they do have to be efficient and they have to meet deadlines, they have this whole process that they've created to tell a story. And that's why there's just a world of difference between Pixar and DreamWorks.
You know, it's interesting how certain companies do have that particular thing that is really clearly unique and clearly theirs. And in spite of the fact that it seems like it's so easy to replicate things, those sort of unique qualities don't get replicated, like Pixar. And there's certain things about Apple that seem like they're very, very unique, and nobody has really replicated it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think to an extent we really look for something that's familiar, but just with all the information that is out there, I think people also look for something that has a unique experience. Like, for example, just recently my wife had her birthday, and we went to Maine for just a long weekend getaway. And instead of staying in a hotel, which would have been just kind of a familiar setting, we actually used Airbnb, and we stayed with this local artist. She rents out space in her home quite a bit on Airbnb. And it was fun just to get to talk with a local and learn about her being an artist there. She told us about just some cool local spots that, a lot of tourists just didn't know about, some restaurants that weren't tourist traps. And I think that's pretty similar too. Kind of this idea of having something that's unique and original is very, very, it's just sought after. People really want that. And I think we have so many tools like Airbnb or Yelp or just Google. I mean, we can read reviews and customer reviews, obviously. We're able to find those things, and I think when companies really take that and they start applying it to their business model, I think they set themselves apart from their competition.
Do you think that people who are working inside companies also are looking for a unique experience, not just the customers?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think, people really long for meaning and a sense of fulfillment in what they do. And our career takes up such a huge chunk of our lives. I mean, 40 plus hours a week for decades and decades, that's a lot. And I think people, especially millennials like myself, this idea of wasting your life or spending so much time at a job that you hate just so that you can buy things that you may not necessarily need is a very terrifying thought. And, there are actually some really interesting studies and some really interesting articles out there where people seem to, they'll stick with companies that offer some kind of sense of fulfillment or autonomy or meaning, and people will stick with that over sticking with the company that offers more money, which is, a very, very, very interesting thought, especially as someone who lives in New York City. I mean, this is like the finance capital of the world. You would think just bonuses and raises and any kind of financial incentive would be all you ever need. But we're kind of seeing that's not necessarily the case.
Interesting. Nick, do you consider yourself to be a business leader?
I mean, yeah, I think so to an extent. I definitely love the idea of being one. Because at the same time, I still feel like there's so much for me to learn. Because I'm only 27 years old, so I feel like, you know, that I've had a limited experience in the business world. But I, at the same time, I love to share ideas and write about ideas. And, you know, actually, about a close to a year and a half ago, I was at Social Media Marketing World, and I heard Michael Hyatt talk about, he was talking about blogging specifically, but I think it kind of applies to being a business leader or a thought leader or anything like that. And he used a Lord of the Rings analogy, which really resonated with me because I love Lord of the Rings. And he said that some people are kind of, they take on more of a Gandalf role, you know, and that's someone who has had decades of experience. They've been the CEO or the president. They've owned their own company. They did well in corporate America, whatever. They kind of have this expertise, and they've done it, and they're sharing their insight. And he said another path is being Aragorn or Strider, and that's kind of the person who has their craft. They have their skill, and they've really mastered it. So they've blazed their trail. And so they're leading someone down that path. And he said that the third path is Frodo, who really is just kind of young and inexperienced, and he goes on this adventure that just kind of stumbled on his lap. He really didn't ever think he'd be doing something like this. And the audience sees him as he goes along the journey. And Michael was saying, you can do that as a blogger. You can share your experiences as you're experiencing them and share your victories and your failures. And I think that's probably where I am in terms of being a business leader, quote unquote, is, you know, just sharing these experiences that I get, you know, and just being upfront about the failures and the successes, because I'm originally from Arkansas. And I've lived in New York for 4 years now. And I feel like just living in New York and working with entrepreneurs and working with small business owners, I'm just getting so much experience I never would have gotten in Arkansas. And so it's interesting to kind of share that with people, because I feel like when you do have the benefit of, you're just getting such amazing experience and you're just gaining knowledge, It kind of feels like a moral obligation to me to share it with people and not be stingy with it.
So as someone who is in the early stages of his career, what advice might you offer a business leader who's mid-career or later and has hit a plateau?
I think it's important to always invest in your education and to just carve time out of your schedule to constantly learn. This is something that's really been standing out to me lately, especially with the rate at things in which they change in this day and age. Things are changing more quickly than ever. And I mean, even younger people like me can become outdated or irrelevant very quickly if you just stop focusing on an education and you stop learning just the tools that are coming out, or you stop studying other entrepreneurs or seeing what people are doing. And so I think if you're kind of in a rut, if you've reached this plateau and you're kind of mid-level like that, a good idea would be just to start studying. You know, study your industry, see what people are doing, see what people who are further along than you, what they're doing, and then see people who aren't necessarily as far along, but they're kind of in the trenches. See what tools they're using, what strategies they're using, and I think you can just kind of mesh all that together and really go to the next level.
Mm-hmm. So learn from people around you.
Yeah, to learn from people around you who are in many, many different phases of their lives and their careers. Because you can learn from people who aren't as experienced as you. You can learn from people who aren't as knowledgeable as you, and vice versa, obviously.
Yeah. So, Nick, what have been some of your big challenges?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I guess some big challenges was working, kind of like we talked about, working in jobs in the past where it didn't feel fulfilling, and it just wasn't exciting to me. That can really drain you emotionally. And even if the work isn't particularly challenging, if it's not intellectually challenging, if it doesn't challenge your creative side, just having this feeling of, wow, I spent 8 hours today kind of doing nothing, and I probably could have accomplished it in 2 hours, and I have to do it 4 more days this week, and then the whole thing starts over. That can really exhaust you. I was very surprised at how exhausted I would feel after doing relatively little work. And that was a real challenge, to just create more opportunities for myself. And I decided, well, I need to just network and meet people. And I was doing a podcast like you do, David, and that was a wonderful opportunity to meet all kinds of people, because people are very willing to be on a show like this and share their expertise. But I think that was one of my biggest challenges, was being able to just to identify the fact that I wasn't happy with my path, and to truly believe, well, I can do something about it. This isn't just normal, because it sounds very normal, and a lot of people do just kind of put up with it. But thinking of ways like, okay, this is where I am, and I'm not really happy with it, and I'd like to be over here. How can I make that happen?
So what are some of the things that you learned, either from people around you or from the guests you had on your podcast, that helped you turn some of these challenges into successes?
I learned that people are actually very eager to help if you just ask. People are surprisingly generous. I mean, it was a pleasant surprise, but it always surprising to me, because for whatever reason, I just assumed that I would be perceived as a burden to people, or they just wouldn't have enough time to help me, or they would just kind of see me as this young opportunist who's just trying to use them as a resource. But just kind of reaching out and asking for help, it really built a relationship with people. Very, very willing to help. A lot of people are like that. They assume, well, I can't ask for help because that would just be weird, or everyone has to do this all on their own. I think that was probably my biggest takeaway, was just being able to just reach out to people who were further along, and I was just really amazed every time.
Interesting. So do you think that there's a lot of fear associated with asking for help?
Yeah, I think there's a whole lot of fear. And I have no idea where it comes from, but I think it's very normal. I think a lot of people experience that. That's very typical.
Interesting. What do you think some of the hardest tasks are that we have to accomplish in business?
I would say, well, just overcoming fear in general. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you become fearless, but just learning to take action when you are feeling afraid. That would be a big one. Also just, I don't know, kind of realizing where your weaknesses are and finding a way to delegate that. That was a big takeaway for me, because for me, I always thought, well, if you improve on your weaknesses, then you get better. And one time I learned that, well, if you're always focusing on your weaknesses, you'll be mediocre at best. But if you work on your strengths, if you identify those and really work on those, then you can become excellent at what you do. So that's been a big one too. Just taking personality tests and reading books and just learning more about myself to learn, okay, these are my strengths over here, these are my weaknesses over there. I really need to focus on these strengths. And then weaknesses, I can put systems into place, or have people who can help, or find people who have strengths where my weaknesses are, and we can complement each other.
What have some of your influencers been? You mentioned trying to learn from other people and books that you've read.
Yeah, I would say a big one has been Seth Godin. And I don't even remember how I discovered Seth Godin, actually, now that I think about it. but he's been an influencer for me for a very long time. I've read so many of his books and blog posts. And I just really think he was revolutionary in the marketing world. And it's funny because his ideas, especially in the 90s, were ahead of their... He was ahead of his time, yet at the same time, it was the perfect timing, because you hear of artists who are so far ahead of their time, they're not recognized for their genius until after they're gone. I feel like Seth was just right in that sweet spot to where he was ahead of his time, to where he could really be a pioneer and do something new, but he was still able to see that within his career and not such a long timeline. So an example would be his whole idea of permission marketing. And that's something that we see everywhere now, you know, content marketing and using social media and email marketing. It's all very similar, but he was kind of one of the first guys to really do this in the email world, and kind of had this idea that, well, you know, maybe people don't like having these messages shouted at them to buy this product or to buy this service. Maybe we could just kind of... you know, get their permission to tell them about product services and to kind of build this relationship with them. And it's so funny that he was doing that 20 years ago. And now today it's, you know, much more of a hot topic, and you hear about it a lot on podcasts and blogs. And I don't know, I think he was brilliant enough to see this opportunity and to just really, really seize it.
Right. And courageous enough to be very public about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because that has to be scary too, especially when you're just going against the grain. I mean, you're going to hear criticism, and I don't know. I think regardless of where you are, there's at least a part of you who's, you know, criticism doesn't feel good. And if we're not too careful, we can do things to avoid criticism that are sometimes to our detriment.
That's true. That's true. Nick, what are you working on now that's really exciting?
Well, I'm working at Microfame Media with Michael Shine, and that's been very exciting. It's been great because I feel like, you know, launching Creative really opened the doors for this, because launching Creative was something that I was doing on the side while I had these jobs that I wasn't passionate about. I just needed, because I felt like I wasn't working in my strengths. I wasn't really doing what I wanted to do. And through Launching Creative, I was able to connect with Mike. And now we're able to do a lot of what we were doing with Launching Creative, but we're doing for clients, and I'm able to meet small business owners and entrepreneurs. And so that's a very exciting thing that I'm working on. And I'm also working on comedy, believe it or not. I'm doing a lot of stand-up comedy here in New York, and that has been an absolute blast. That's been a lot of fun too.
What's the connection between comedy and the other part of your work?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised to learn this, but there's a lot of overlap with comedy and entrepreneurship. So a lot of people, when they go into comedy, they think, well, if I can just be the funniest comic out there, then I'll make it. I'll get my big break. But even if you look at it from a business standpoint with supply and demand, there are so many comedians and only so many comedy clubs and only so many shows, you know, and for every funny comedian out there, there are thousands of other comedians who are just as funny, if not more funny. So what you really have to do is make yourself an asset to other people, to clubs, to other comedians. And so you have to find ways to brand yourself, to market yourself. You have to network with people. And to me, that really sounds like an entrepreneur. If you're an entrepreneur, you're either selling a product that ultimately is an asset to the customer. Either it's, you know, it's solving a problem for them, you know, or if you're a B2B business, maybe you're selling information products that will help them make more money. Or if you're an entrepreneur and you offer a service, it's kind of the same thing. You're solving a problem for them, whatever that problem may be. And yeah, it's really funny to see comedy just overlap in that way. You know, I met an artist here in New York a while back. He's a painter, And he does really well. And it's funny because the painter is pretty much the ultimate analogy for a struggling artist, for a starving artist. And he was telling me that he spends about 20% of his time painting, and he spends 80% of his time networking and branding himself and marketing himself. And that's how he's able to get commissions. And I just see a lot of that in comedy and business and everything. And very few people seem to, few people seem to practice that.
Yeah, no, if you're an artist, you still, if you're an artist and you're selling your own stuff, whether your stuff is comedy or it's painting or anything else that you're creating, if you're selling it, then you are still running a business.
Yeah, that's so true. And you definitely, it's funny. It's a funny mix of just finding a way to balance everything. But if you're only focusing on your craft, I mean, at the end of the day, you're not really finding new clients or new customers, and you're not making new connections. And that's really going to hurt you in the long run.
Do you see a connection, Nick, between the way you need to market and sell creative talent compared to the way you need to market and sell other kinds of goods or services, in the connection between the marketing and selling process or the running the business and how it might impact your ego? Because if you're a creative person, what you're selling is very personal to you. Right, so there, I would imagine there's a fair amount of the way that it touches your soul and your ego. Same thing with particularly with a small business. A lot of what you're selling has a very personal connection to you, and I'm wondering if you could talk about what your experience has been, maybe with both in comedy and in business, in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of what we were talking about earlier. I feel like it all kind of comes together perfectly, full circle, and you know, kind of Daniel Pink's concept of using your whole mind, of using both the analytical side of your brain and the creative side of your brain. I mean, what that makes me think of is a famous quote from Seth Godin when he says, it's something along the lines of, if you're racing to the bottom, you just might win, which is, I think, brilliant. I mean,
yeah.
He's saying, if you want to be the cheapest, I mean, someone can always be cheaper than you. If you want to be a commodity, I mean, look at what the thing, like, if you do sell products, like, you're not going to be able to beat Walmart. They have a whole network where they're the cheapest. So you have to offer something that they don't offer. And so I think, you know, some people are on that end of the spectrum to where they're so focused on price or just efficiency or just getting the job done, that, well, ultimately those things can be automated or outsourced. And then I think on the other end of the spectrum is the creative side, where people say, well, I just want to express myself, or, you know, I don't want to focus on the business side of it, or, you know, they kind of wear it as a badge of honor, being a struggling artist. And I think when you really marry the two, that's when you can really, really crush it, and you can do a lot, because you're being efficient, you're being logical, you're solving problems. At the same time, you're being creative, and you're creating something new, and you're telling a story. And you're creating a platform that people just resonate with, and they feel like they're a tribe member. They feel like they belong.
So along those lines, Nick, who do you know who is doing really remarkable work and is crushing it? It's really resonating with people, and they're creating a tribe, particularly if it's somebody that the audience might not know about.
That's a really good question. I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk is definitely doing that. You know, he's just built a massive brand for himself. You know, he has like 500 employees at this point or something. And I know he was on your show recently. And, you know, he has a cult following. You know, talking about evangelist as a term, it's kind of funny just making that connection. But I would definitely say a cult following. I mean, I've seen articles out there where people criticize him and the comments get brutal. It's as if, you know, their mother has been insulted or something. Like, people will fight to the death for Gary's honor. And
yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
There's definitely a tribe behind him.
It is a strong tribe. And I really admire that he's been able to do that.
And I have to tell you, having him as a guest on the show, he has a surprising amount of humility.
Yeah, I hear that a lot from people who have encountered him, they've interviewed him, or they've met him, people seem to say that very consistently, which is not what you would think just with his whole persona. That's always cool for me to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely doing that. I think going back to Pixar, John Lasseter has definitely done that. I mean, people love Pixar. I'm one of them. You know, because I feel like these other animated films, they just blur together. Like it's all the same thing. But with Pixar, they're very creative. They're very good at telling stories. But at the same time, you kind of feel like it's almost like an old friend. And whenever I see a new trailer, a new teaser, and it says, you know, this new movie, you know, brought to you from the minds that brought you Finding Nemo and Toy Story, it's like I get genuinely excited, and it's like, all right, I'm already on board. Like I'm gonna watch this, whatever it is.
Yeah, me too. It's true. Yeah. There are elements that they bring together that nobody else brings together quite the same way.
Yeah, I had mentioned DreamWorks earlier, and you know, when there's like a new DreamWorks movie, I don't connect it with Shrek or Shark Tale or whatever they've done. It's just kind of like, oh, it's another movie. And there's so many movies out there. With Pixar, it's kind of like it's just the club. It's like the next thing that they've put out there, and it's like they're all connected. They have the Pixar universe. It's like everything's connected.
Yeah, these are great examples. So, Nick, how can listeners learn more about you?
Well, very active on Twitter. So you can find me. I'm just at Nick Parks. That's NIK_Parks. You can also find us at microfamemedia.com. And I'm also on Instagram. So I'm pretty much on all the platforms, and I'm pretty active on social media. I like it a lot. So people will definitely be able to connect with me there.
Okay, great. Well, Nick, this has been a really inspiring conversation. I've learned a lot, and I'm assuming our audience will too. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Nick Parks, media evangelist, writer, and content marketer at Microfame Media. Thanks again, Nick, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, David. It's been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.